The chairman of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change told delegates at today's opening ceremony of the UN Climate Summit in New York that its fifth assessment report, compiled by hundreds of scientists, has three key findings. One, human influence on the climate is clear and growing. Two, quick and decisive action is needed to avoid destructive outcomes. And three, there are ways to limit climate change. That language is pretty clear and unambiguous. So what makes a scientist a good communicator? Turns out the scientific community has been figuring that out. From The Pulse at WHYY in Philadelphia, Susan Phillips reports.
Take a look at a definition of radiative forcing. I found this in a report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
The change in net irradiance at the tropopause after allowing for stratospheric temperatures to readjust to radiative equilibrium.
Are you following? Me neither. But what if he said,
the sun shines down on Earth, warming our oceans, burning our skin, heating the asphalt. The numbers suggest more and more the heat is getting absorbed by the Earth and its inhabitants, and less is being reflected out into space. This makes the Earth hotter.
Well, now you know I'm describing global warming. Scientists face a struggle all the time, how to talk about their work in a way that everyone gets, but still remain true to the science. So in the last 10 years, major scientific societies have begun holding workshops on communications at their gatherings. Some have even established big money prizes. Naomi Oreskes is a professor at Harvard. She teaches the history of science, and she's written extensively about funding for climate change deniers.
There's definitely been a change from a feeling 10 years ago that it was the job of scientists to do the science as well and as accurately as possible, but that it was really someone else's job to communicate it. And most scientists I knew and I talked to really thought it was your job, that it was the job of science journalists. And scientists used to get mad because they felt that science journalists did a poor job.
Oreskes says controversies around politically charged topics such as climate change have led a lot of scientists to rethink how they talk about their work. If the science is complicated, she says, it's a delicate art to simplify without dumbing it down.
I always like to say it's not dumbing it down, it's cleaning it up, right? But how to make that clean up, how to sort of polish it and make it presentable in a way that's not misleading, it's not trivial.
She says one of the best science communicators to emerge from the lab into the public sphere is this guy.
We have to accept that we don't live in a world where scientists can simply do the science, publish it, and assume that it will translate to good public policy. It doesn't work that way.
That's Penn State climate scientist Michael Mann. If he sounds like he's on the warpath for better science communication, he is.
We have to be out there defending the science, informing the electorate, explaining the science and its implications, because if we don't, it means special interests, front groups, paid attack dogs will simply poison the discussion with misinformation and disinformation.
Mann's views are shaped by personal experience. In 1998, he co-authored a paper that looked at weather patterns from medieval times by analyzing ice cores and tree rings. And in this paper was a simple little graph, one he thought pretty uninteresting. But the graph communicated his findings so well, so easily to a lay audience that it got a lot of press. Then he became a top target for those who claim climate change is a hoax. He was called before Congress. His emails were hacked. At one point, in a national magazine, he was referred to as the, quote, Jerry Sandusky of climate change.
I never envisioned that majoring in physics and applied math and going into the study of the climate system would place me at the center of, you know, what may be the most contentious debate that we have faced as a society. I didn't sign up for that.
But now man has embraced it. That iconic chart is now known as the hockey stick graph. It shows how the average temperature of the Earth has risen dramatically since the start of the Industrial Revolution. Mann wrote a book on his experiences, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. Mann says back before the famous graph, he was pretty naive and just wanted to stay in his lab doing nerdy calculations. He's now an advocate for scientists to get out of their bunkers and engage the public.
And part of that is using metaphors and thinking, trying to get outside of your own scientific comprehension of the issue and think about how, you know, how would I think about this if I wasn't a climate scientist, if I wasn't a scientist at all?
Mann says the challenges include widespread misconceptions about the scientific process.
We don't prove things in science. We establish, you know, best explanations for observed phenomena. We apply, you know, weights of evidence. We pose hypotheses, and then we look at the observations and we see if they support the hypotheses. And it's this iterative process. There are huge uncertainties at the base of every area of science. That doesn't mean that we know nothing.
Both Mann and Harvard professor Naomi Oreskes say it's not simply a lack of public speaking skills that thwart science communication. Science sits at the center of many major public policy debates. Economic interests on both sides look for science that supports their position and will attack findings that don't. For Here and Now, I'm Susan Phillips in Philadelphia.
A couple other stories we're following today. Cadillac has announced it is moving its headquarters from Michigan to New York next year. In a statement issued today, Cadillac's new president explained the move by saying there is no city in the world where the inhabitants are more immersed in a premium lifestyle than in New York. Cadillac is a part of GM. It's been struggling. Sales are down 5% this year, even though luxury car sales are increasing in the U.S., with German automakers getting the bulk of that market. Cadillac's executives and marketing staff will set up shop, though, as we said, in a loft in Soho, but most employees will remain in Michigan. Meanwhile, after a labor dispute over the summer that threatened to derail the upcoming season of the Metropolitan Opera in New York, the season got underway last night. The employee unions had been fighting management over proposed pay cuts to cover a deficit in the Met's annual budget. The sides came to a deal in August, which cut expenses over the next 4 years that amount to about $90 million. So last night, the audience was able to hear The Marriage of Figaro. Here and Now.